Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. This is episode number 28. My guest this week is Boddy Nodge, as it is most weeks. We talk about everything from Hampton to the new CBA, and Boddy takes us through the lovely Free Throw Foundation, which is a great charity helping underprivileged kids gain access to basketball equipment, coaching, and time. I'll put a link in the description if you want to be a part of that. Just quickly before we start, I want to say a hello and thank you to the very sweet gentlemen at the Council Sports and the DNP podcast, who I went on their show just recently. Great little podcast, talking all things basketball and sports in a really laid back and fun way. So check that out and thank you very much. But for now, this is episode 28 with Boddy Nodge. Hello, Boddy. How are you?
I'm extraordinary, thank you. And that previous number you gave me, Joseph, it got me Tristan's lawn mowing services.
Are you in need of a lawnmower?
Yeah, well, no. It's actually easy whether I need my lawn mowed.
Oh, true.
And so, yeah, Tristan can come round at any time. He's available now.
I wonder, is he based in Adelaide or in Sydney?
I would very much... I was going to say very much doubt it, but it's a mobile number, so it could be anywhere. He could be mowing lawns in Broome.
You know what? I'm going to give him a call and I'm going to find out. I'll let you know. How was
you could get him to? You could get him to advertise on your show.
You know, this could be the start of something very. This could be the start of a
NBL Pocket Podcast presented by Tristan's Lawn Mowing Services.
You know what? I might even do it gratis after that.
Yeah, right? Oh, jeez. Okay. Sorry. What were you asking? I didn't mean to catch up.
Your benefit, the lunch.
The Free Throw Foundation lunch. Yeah, because I'm feeling a bit overdressed for this podcast because I'm still in the suit. Yeah, it was extremely good. Joey Wright, Adelaide 36ers coach, and Chris Lucas, Adelaide Lightning coach, were the two guest speakers. And the format of the lunch was that they weren't really asked questions about their teams or what their plans are for this year, the sort of run-of-the-mill stuff that you get. It was more about how they got into the game, their philosophy, their backgrounds, stories about players that are difficult. There was some very amusing stuff. Particularly, Joey told a good story about Sam McKinnon, which I can't really relay right now. But it was probably the high point of the lunch. Which, as I don't know if your listeners know, but that money raised by the Free Throw Foundation here in South Australia all goes straight towards those young junior players who can't afford basketball, you know, that are potentially lost to the game or make a state team but can't meet the financial commitment of the travel, the uniforms, or everything else that goes into being part of a state junior team. So and they have a really tough time actually working out who should be the beneficiaries, because there are so many cases of people that really can't. It's an expensive sport. We're an expensive sport. Mm. You know, it's indoors. It's uniforms. It's shoes. It's all that sort of stuff. It's not like you can just get a pair of footy boots and run around. No.
And it, more than anything, as you said, it's the court hire, the indoor time that is the most expensive. A pair of sneakers, $100 a year, but then it's your uniform and your travel. And it can get expensive. That's a good. What's that called again? Sorry.
The Free Throw Foundation. It's a great charity. It started. Well, it's quite some time ago now. It's been around for quite a few years, and they raise money mostly through lunches. They'll have three or four during the year, and there have been people here like Luke Longley has been a guest speaker, wow. Andre Lamanis, all kinds of people. Anthony Moore when he was first appointed CEO of Basketball Australia. Joe Ingles, Brad Newley. It's really the gamut. Of basketball people.
Is it only Adelaide, South Australia based, or is it national?
It's South Australian based, but they will bring in terrific speakers from elsewhere. Like they had Bruce McAvaney. I know he's South Australian, but they had Bruce McAvaney in the next lunch in July. The guest speaker will be Kevin Sheedy. AFL legend. So, but it really just does go towards those kids in SA,
Okay. Well, I'll definitely make mention of that. I saw recently on your website that you did a piece on the Euro Step and the birth of that and the maturation of that. Did I read that right?
Yeah.
And I was just thinking to myself, I was like, when are we going to see Court Vision take the same route? When are we going to see Euro Court Vision, Eurovision? That's the next thing, I think.
That was a long build-up for that punchline.
It was worth the wait.
It was worth the wait.
In the middle there, I got a lot of self-doubt. You're like this, though. I was in an elevator in a rather large office building, and I got on, and then a young woman got on, and we sort of had the pleasantries of, you know, oh, hello, how are you? To which I replied, I'm well. And then we went about six floors up, dead silence for a good couple, and then I just sort of tapped her to get her attention again. I said, and by the way, thank you for that kind of inquiry. And then I leant back, and then there was again, we ascended more floors, and there was a good long while in between, and I could see from the back of her head, she was sort of thinking, whoa, what was my kind of inquiry? So it lives on.
Excellent.
Did you watch Eurovision?
No. I missed it. Actually, I do usually watch it because it's a lot of fun, and yeah, I like the presenters and everything. It's a fun night. It's a very different sort of night, isn't it?
Do you root for Hungary or Australia now that they're in it? But before Australia was there,
oh, I don't really. It's always amusing to me to see how everybody votes, widely disparate it is. That's more amusing to me. I actually hope for a good song, really. and then go, okay, that's not bad, let's hope that wins, and then you sort of start to barrack for that.
Yeah, it's been a lean couple of years there. Alright, let's start at the top. Let's go with the American who wrote the article. Did you read that or care for it? Or?
No, I've seen it's attracted a lot of social media attention, and I did pick up on the Perth Bandits line, but yeah. I didn't really get into... Yeah, I'm not interested in seeing other people's ignorance.
Yeah, it was a bad one because I spoke to him. I thought this guy, I got questions for this guy.
I did see you had him on the podcast, but I haven't listened to that. I'm afraid
I wouldn't bother to be honest. Anyway, he confirmed what I think most of us already thought in his writing, and I didn't really feel the need to belabor the point with him too much. But I think the interesting thing is what I took from it is, number one, that it was basically written like a blog. It was more of a rant than anything. And then it had a sort of rather swish-looking, you know, header on a website, and then it got picked up. It was not an article. It was not journalism. And that's just where something gets kind of whipped up a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was civil enough and nice, I suppose.
Look, I got to tell you, Joseph, after being in the media industry for the better part of almost five decades, the amount of ignorance I had to deal with outside of basketball in trying to sell basketball stories to my editors, saying this is worthwhile, look, this has just happened in our state league. Tess Madgen has just gone off 45 points, 28 rebounds, 17 assists, and 10 blocks. That is a story. And they're going, no, it's just local league, no one cares. And it's like, you sort of, that's just a random example where you're just bashing your head. And so when I see ignorance, I've had my share of that. I've had my share of people who are stupid that you've got to kind of walk through from the basis of, you know, the foundation. They don't know. They don't care. They haven't done their research. They've just got a point of view, and they're just going to express this point of view and then pull in some random facts that might support that point of view. And that it's tedious to me. And I would hate to be working in the media industry right now. When I was a basketball writer, it was a point of pride for me to have an article in the paper every day.
Yeah.
All right. And if I didn't, I felt like I hadn't done my job. And that wasn't to the newspaper. I felt that responsibility to the readership. And to get stories in, it was getting, instead of getting easier, it was getting harder in the last couple of years. And it's like, wow, I'm back to where I was as a cadet journalist trying to barrack for a story. So, yeah, this is all a long-winded way of saying that, no, I didn't read the article.
No, not going to suffer fools gladly anymore. And that, I think that's a good way to be. One thing I did, speaking about Perth Bandits, and I said this to Aaron Torres, was his name, I said, I actually prefer the name Bandits to Wildcats because obviously Wildcats introduce species, Bandits, criminal violence, not great, but still, I, at this point with our environment, probably a step up.
Yeah, it's actually bandits. Not the worst. You know, when Brisbane, Yeah, when Brisbane came back and they were debating there for a little while, as you probably remember, whether they should revive the Bullets name or come in with a clean new identity. Maybe someone, if someone had suggested Bandits, you know, that would
have... already have a baseball team.
Oh, do they?
Brisbane Bandits.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, there you go.
Going on from that... Sorry. Yep.
No, I was going to say, there you go. Now I'm showing ignorance. I won't be listening back to this now because I can't listen to myself being stupid.
RJ Hampton, what do you think? Is this the sort of, you've been around the basketball for a while now, long time?
I hope so. I hope this is the beginning, or it's not really the beginning, because Terence Ferguson was the unofficial beginning. And I don't know, how do we classify Devin Hall from last season? Was he part of this, really?
He was drafted already. I think this pertains specifically to players.
Yeah, okay. So Bowen is our only other
one. Ferguson is a great one, those two.
Yeah. But look, I hope this is another door opening, and I think the fact that it's created quite a bit of international attention with the ESPN announcement and then Adam Silver making his commentary after that. These are all good things for our league, absolutely. And further to that, Andrew Bogut going off an NBL season back into the NBA and being able to be a contributor also is a good sight for our league, you know, and it really helps us. Like an NBA club that's got an older player might think, you know what, let's just ship him off to Australia where he can play a 28-game season however many, 32, 34, whatever it is, and we can bring him back in at the tail end, get like 14, 15 regular season games into him and have him in prime position for the playoffs. And all these little bits and pieces, and Hansen's a big piece, they're all very helpful to us, no question. Yeah. Whether he makes an impact immediately, that's questionable.
Yeah. I think, well, I'd put the over-under. I think a safe bet is sort of 10 points, 5 assists, and I'd be taking the under. But that's not to say that would be a poor showing or a failure or anything like that. This is a very interesting basketball experiment for the NBL, for RJ Hampton and others. And, you know, to score sort of in around those sort of marks in the NBL, is that age would be incredible, and to see him develop and everything. So I'm really hopeful. Maybe he comes out and he's, you know, exceptional. Who knows? But that's sport.
Well, here's the interesting thing, is it's almost like the Americans are cottoning on to something that we've been doing as Australians for a long time, because we have had 17, 18-year-old kids coming out of junior basketball that are playing in a Waratah League, in a QBL, in a Big V, in you know, all these sorts of competitions, even in Siebel. So these are young men that are already playing against older, physically more imposing athletes, and then they go off to college.
Yeah.
And they arrive in college and they're already ahead of the kid that's been picked up straight out of high school, because they've already been playing against adults. And now we've seen this situation where there are players starting to look at this option and go, listen, I could go over there as an 18-year-old to the NBL and work with pros, be with you know, men, not other boys my age, and that will better prepare me for the next level. Mm. And there's a lot of truth in that. There's absolute truth in that. That's why Aussies are so popular when they go into college programs, because they're way ahead in terms of basketball IQ, experience and ability. An 18-year-old going up against a 22-year-old, an 18-year-old Aussie going up against a senior is not fussed, because he may have been defending an NBL player in a Siebel game, you know, 6 months earlier. So it's interesting to see the shoe on the other foot, so to speak.
And I think the interesting thing as well is, like, also the rules in the NCAA are getting a little bit ridiculous, perhaps always have been. So you get more coach time, more individual sessions, you get a game a week against better competition. I don't think there's no debate about that. And then also, you know, you've got all your shoe deal and money and stuff. I mean, the rumour is $500,000 US. Can that be right? Bloody can it? That's a lot.
Yes. It can be right, because what you will find is where is that money coming from? Don't presume that it's just coming from the Breakers, because I'm probably telling a story out of school here, but with Terence Ferguson, I'm pretty much sure that whoever his agents were in the US,
I understand,
kicked in Yeah, they kicked in some money for him so that he could get that experience, knowing that down the other end of the ledger, when he goes back and makes a massive deal in the NBA, they'll be better for that. So it was an investment. So that money may not all be Breakers' money going towards the young man. It could be coming from other sources that, have a long-term interest in him.
And I think, obviously, with the next stars, which he's signed on to, the NBL is going to take some of it as well. So it's Breakers, NBL, and Investor X, whoever it may be. Any concerns for you?
In terms of?
In terms of, like, just obviously his age is, you know, he's very, very young, and young players struggle in their first step in every league. What about from a sort of social level where he's like, you know, I don't want to juggle books, I just want to be a pro. Do you think that sort of put any emphasis on just being a gym rat, just basketball, and not being worldly, or am I reading into that too much?
I don't know, because I think the situation with this young man, Hampton, is that he is academically quite brilliant. He's no dummy that needs some sort of basketball scholarship or sporting scholarship to get him to the next level, because he can't do it himself. Academically, he's already there. So for him, if he wants sometime later in life, if he wants to complete a degree, he can. And who knows, maybe he will. But like Ferguson, when he came to Adelaide, his mother came with him. So she was here for the entire time. So he had a little bit of a support system. And he was in an Australian program and in Australia where it's not that different to the US. I mean, we are different. We're not the same as Americans. But you drive down the road and you see the Golden Arches of McDonald's or you know, and you're sort of going, okay, yeah, there's a familiarity about it. So now, in the case of Hampton, he's heading into Auckland, and he's taking a lot of his family are going with him.
The whole family, now, is what I've heard.
There you go. So now, I'm not sure that the Breakers are picking up a tab for all of that. That could be other interests, the people who are his agents, who are the people that are around him, his core group. Mm. So I think he'll feel comfortable within. I mean, we do know that New Zealanders speak English in a rather funny way.
I was about to say,
they have some some vowel confusion.
They just do. No vowels at all. Not necessarily. They're very they're sort of reduce, reuse for some people. They're very, very resourceful, is the word I'm
saying. But no, I think he's coming into a good situation. So I don't think he's got. And I'm not sure about Brian Bowen's situation, but I'm pretty sure that there was at least one or two games that I watched him on television where there was commentary made of the fact that his mother or his family members were here. Now, whether they were here for the duration or whether they were just visiting, that I don't know. But in Ferguson's case, they were here for his whole year, and in Hampton's case, they'll be there for his whole time in New Zealand. So he's not in an entirely foreign situation. You know, Ferguson had that mate from high school that went to China and found it a lot more difficult.
Right.
On his
Jennings
one year out.
Or Tyler, I can't. Or Moutier, one of the three.
Yeah, I think it was the last one.
And then also Ferguson had his best friend in Adelaide, Anthony Drimmick.
Yeah, which is also handy, because if you want to butt heads... Yeah. I was going to say, if you want to butt heads with someone, it's got to be with your best friend, and Drimmick and him, they butted heads. But look,
classic.
You know what, though, Joseph? The reality is that the public at large would be naive to think that that doesn't happen
all the time.
You know, once a fortnight at an NBL training, no matter who it is, that a couple of guys would just get a little bit fed up with each other. They're around each other a lot of the time. And, you know, it's just you're having a bad day, you get niggled, and bang, something happens. I reckon that's happened in every program and in every year.
Oh, yeah.
And it just so happens that that's a day that there's some TV cameras down there for a news item to talk to Joey or somebody afterwards, and they capture it, and suddenly it's huge news. But yeah, I don't think Anthony and Terrence had any real issue. That was just a moment at practice.
I didn't even throw punches. It was just pushing. I think with Hampton, what I took from it, first of all, I got sort of a real mischievous vibe from him, where he was like, you know, when they go, oh, why did you make this decision? His first thing wasn't, oh, I want to play with men, NBL, I'm excited. It was, I want to be an original, I want to be a trendsetter. So he's very much of the zeitgeist, very much of his time. Not that that's not a criticism by any means. But, I could... And then also, you know, the money's great. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, you know, the money was a really good offer and college didn't prepare, you know. So that was my one thing where I was like, but no negatives. Moving on to the new collective bargaining agreement. Obviously a step forward for the players. It's always nice when they get paid more. They are 95% of the product. Oh, thereabout. But, you know, obviously the price of basketball has now gone up, by my measure, about $300,000 a year. So that's... Yeah. What do you think?
Well, that's the thing. We all get excited, and it's the same with the WNBL announcing that its minimum wage is $13,000. Now, that's wonderful, and it's long overdue. But is it doable? Is it sustainable? Yeah. Does it potentially throw a WNBL club to the wolves within a couple of years? And now we're just getting back to your point, that, okay, so now the salary cap is $1.43 million. Excellent. But did everybody just suddenly find $3.2 million? Yeah. Did that just slap Cairns in the face? Did that just kick Illawarra in the shins? So that's the part of it. We get excited and we think that's great, and that the sport's at that point where we can pay that. But is it? Is it really?
And then expansion is the other thing. I mean, obviously the Southern Huskies are probably sitting there going, oh, darn. But I don't think any owner or management team or whatever said between the off-season said, you know what we'd like to do? Spend another $300,000 on the same, what is essentially the same product. I think, but it's all sort of what camp you're in and circle of control. If you're the players, you're thinking, great, more money.
Absolutely.
We get hurt. We only play for 10 so years at best, you know.
Yep.
If you're the owners, you're in another camp. If you're a fan, you're in a bit of both. So
we'll
see how it turns out. But it's a good sign that there's
100%.
Growth.
You're 100% correct in terms of what you've just said. That's great for the players, and it's what they should be getting. If that's what the market allows. But if we're paying money that ultimately means the club isn't sustainable because it can't do it year in, year out. Mm, yeah, exactly. So it becomes very much a short-term situation. Then you go, okay, we've gone to 9 clubs now with the Phoenix, but do we lose a regional club within the next 18 months?
I sure hope not.
Yeah, I do too. And I hope we get to 10 rather than we go back to 8.
I agree.
But, you know, where does the extra money come from in this world where you're competing with so many other sporting teams in your own city, no matter where you are?
Mm. No, it's a toughie. No, I thought about that. And, you know, the other thing is you got to remember, if the salary cap goes up, which means that the salary floor goes up, or the cap goes up, so teams that were going over the cap before, let's say they have the same number, that's less money that goes back to the clubs from those who have gone over the cap. So it's almost a bit of a double hand slap. We'll see how it turns out. Obviously, there must have been representatives from the owners there going, we don't like this and that, but maybe they got overdone. Who knows? I haven't heard anyone come out terribly critical of the new CBA. It would be a bad look for a club if they did.
Well, who can? Exactly. Who can do that? At a time when we're sort of, there's a lot of backslapping going on, who can come out and go, wait a minute, I'm the voice of reason here. It's like, well, no, you're the actual person that's out of step with everybody else. So that's the way it looks. I mean, I'm surprised that the Perth Bandits haven't kicked up, though. I mean, I think they should be looking at this going, this is very difficult for us as a startup.
Body, I think the Perth Bandits are going to be just fine. Adelaide, let's go on. New additions. Adelaide, everyone was sort of trickling out announcements here and there. Adelaide just went, you know what? Here they all are, every one of them, all 5 of them, within 2 days of each other. Obviously, they bring back, it's Brendan Tees, am I pronouncing his surname right?
That's correct, yep.
Brendan Tees.
Like a Keys.
It's got Keys, Tees. What does he bring? Like, I'm always, his play is what it is. What does Joey like about him?
Joey likes about him because what he likes most about him is he's an extension of Joey in that he quote, understands, unquote, in terms of, he understands what needs to be done offensively, defensively, and he's got the right locker room mentality, team first. And he's a great example of team first because even when he was captain a couple of years ago, he was coming off the bench. There were games he got a DNP. I didn't care at all as long as we had won. That was the important thing, as long as we win. That's his mantra. And he's an extension of Joey, as I say, and Joey loves him and he sees him as a glue guy. And Joey puts a great store by having glue guys on your team, and anyone who's coached knows it's essential to have a couple of those players in your group. Along with Tees, these extra players have come in, most of them have been described as glue guys. So either we're going to have a very sticky team, or that isn't very good, but geez, they get along well, or he might again surprise. And with Joey, the record's on the board.
Yeah. What about the next one? Kevin White coming over from Illawarra. What do you like about him?
I've always liked Whitey because he's just an honest, hardworking, hard ass, for want of a better term.
He just gets out. Type player.
Yep. And I love the fact that I'm going to say it's going to sound like a negative. I don't mean it to, but a guy with his limitations can irritate the bejesus out of a superstar like a Jerome Randall. Yeah. So, I saw him, not on one occasion, or on repeated occasions, reduce Randall to a fairly angry man on the floor trying to see where he was and whatever. And I don't really think that Kevin was doing anything untoward other than playing him close. And what's happened in basketball over time, I feel, particularly in America, is that we've got more and more celebrity, and I'm meaning that in the sport as well, and less and less hard work. And so when a Matthew Dellavedova dives on a loose ball, he's a dirty player because we don't do that anymore. We're a bit too good for that. And so I see a lot of those sort of qualities in Kevin White. Is he's just a guy that's going to play hard. So Whitey, I just see him very much in that Dellavedova mold. Obviously, you know, we're talking about one guy who's won an NBA championship and one guy who's playing NBL, so there's an obvious difference there. But he's that style, and I think that, clubs need guys that are just going to go out there and work their tail off for the betterment of the team. And he's a perfect example of that.
Do you think Joey went into this off-season looking at the team last year and went, he's obviously said, we got to get better defensively and tougher? Do you think that was the mindset?
Absolutely correct. Those were exactly the words he used when I interviewed him recently for a piece of the blog about all the new people, you know, the guys that have the, you know, quote-unquote right stuff. And it was about, you know, we need to be able to play defense and we need to be tougher. And that's the sort of guys that are now appearing on the roster. It's okay to have guys that are spectacular and wonderful, but are they doing the blue collar stuff? We didn't have that. Adelaide didn't have that.
Sorry, buddy, you go.
I keep hearing myself saying we, and I actually don't feel that way about the 36ers right now. I actually feel quite disenfranchised, more or less. But I don't recognise the team greatly. I don't mean that about on court either, Joseph. I mean just generally around the place. It's just a weird organisation now.
Even from a long distance, they've behaved odd. Obviously, Creek was a bad situation.
Yes,
that they could have handled better. You know, and then you know Joey in this off season, it was just really. I felt, first of all, I felt played out too publicly for number one.
Yep.
And then two, you know, sort of mismatch. And there's no problem with going, we don't like this, we do like this. I don't know, just it felt very sort of poorly communicated. And then when it was too vocal. Anyway, tell me about the two new guys. Deshaun Taylor, have you seen him at all in training or in person? Have you met him? And then the other one is Obi Kaye.
Yeah.
Am I pronouncing his name?
Yeah, Obi Kaye, motherfuckers. I'd change that a little bit for you. I haven't seen Deshaun Taylor at all, but I spoke at length with Joey about him, and Joey did something that he's never done before, which was sign the guy without actually having worked him out, which he's never done before with an import. Yeah, but he had a lot. The fact that everybody he spoke to, and that's within his sort of trusted peer group in the United States, when the name Deshaun Taylor came up, they all said the same thing. Hey, man, if you can get him, get him. He's going to do ABC. He's going to be really good in your league. And so he kept getting a lot of that. So he made contact he said he ticked all the boxes when they spoke. He said, not in a way where, you know, when you're trying to recruit a guy wants to come to your program or is interested in coming, he's going to say the right things. He's going to listen to your question and he's going to say what you want to hear. But Joey's been around the block more than once. And so his questioning and in-depth conversation with Taylor was a lot deeper than just, yeah, coach, I'm going to come and play D and I'm going to do this. And he actually, he really took to the guy. I thought, this guy is my kind of basketball player. So he didn't really need to see him face-to-face on court, try him out. He'd had a number of these most trusted confidants speaks so highly of this guy that he's really excited about him.
You know, I mean, I've only seen the highlights and sort of looked at his game and the credentials that he comes with, but the player who he reminds me of is a former import of the Wildcats, a guy by the name of Darren Brooks, who was, again, a sort of larger, bigger point guard, shooting guard.
Yep.
I think Deshaun Taylor's more towards the point guard. Darren Brooks was more towards the two and three. That real kind of gritty defender.
Yep.
And I loved Darren Brooks as a player. So I hope I'm being reasonable when I make that comparison.
Yep. And the key word you used there was defender. Like he's another guy that ticks that box of improving the 36ers defensively, and brings a hardness that's really what they've been looking for. You know, in the last couple of years, even, you know, Shannon Shorter 2 seasons ago, you wouldn't call him a hard guy. He was an adequate NBL player, but he wasn't a guy that could shut anybody down defensively or a guy that could necessarily light it up offensively. So you're sort of going, actually, he's not that good. Whereas Joey just can't get enough of Taylor. He thinks this guy's going to be a real star in our league.
I really like the moves. These are all very, very much speak to what they were trying to do, which are just real sensible, hard-nosed deals. And all of them are they're all the same. Tell me about Obi, though. I don't know him.
Well, he has some history with Joey going back some time. He's I think he's about 6'8", and he's 23, and he's been playing overseas and coming back and playing in the QBL, where he's had some great numbers with Logan Thunder, and he's just the sort of guy that needs the Joey touch, where if he buys into what Joey's selling, and what Joey sells to the player individually is, you trust me and I'll make you a better player. And that's, you know, if you look at Joey's history, that's what happens. No better example than Mitch Creek, who was sort of a talented, sort of wild guy when Joey got here. And now he's crediting Joey for the fact that he's got his foot in the NBA door. So it's whether you buy in or not. I mean, I think Nathan Sobey bought in for a while and then maybe wanted to go his own way. So I think Joey's very confident that this young man's another one that will buy in, as has Jack McVay or Harry Froehlich, and will do really well in the program.
Do you think Drimmick will be back for day one?
That's an interesting one, yeah. I think he's hopeful. That's a watch and see one, really. I think and the other watch and see one is Jacob Wiley.
I was about to say,
because
my next question was, who is less likely to return to Adelaide in NBL 20, Froehlich or Jacob Wiley?
Jacob Wiley.
Yeah. You would put that, the unlikelihood, what would you put the unlikelihood at?
99-1.
So you're telling me there's a chance then?
Yeah, and for listeners who haven't seen Dumb and Dumber, but it could be listening to them. I sat with Joey today. We were at the same table at the Free Throw Foundation luncheon, and I said to him, because there'd been a story this week about Jacob Wiley doing very well at Gran Canaria and possibly there's some European interest. And in talking with Joey, there's more than a little bit of European interest, and if the guy can get a contract for three times what he's getting paid here, which is the way it seems, then, you know, it would be Joey that would pack his bags for him and say, you're crazy to stay. So, and further to that conversation, I'm going to put a blog up in a little while about who the potential replacement might be. No name, but the best thing that I can say is the best thing that Joey said, which is, He's very much like Chris Williams.
Oh, wow. Because I was looking at the additions in the team and I was like, which is a strange thing to say with Adelaide, but are they going to struggle to score? And if they do something like Chris Williams, well, the answer is no.
And the answer, yeah.
Conger's not at all.
No. I think we spoke about this before, that Conger wasn't the right fit for Adelaide. Conger is a terrific basketball player, and he thrived in Rob Beveridge's program, but the way Rob Beveridge runs his program is different to the way Joey runs his. And I think I used the example of Willie Farley.
Yep.
That when Farley came here in 2002, he just couldn't be stopped, was sensational for Phil Smythe. Then he went into Gordy McLeod's program at West Sydney, and he was a shadow of that player. So, different coaches, players respond differently. And Conga, I'm surprised that Conga hasn't got a contract already.
What's interesting is he is on the NBL team to go to China. He's one of two free agents. The other is Majok, I think.
Yep.
That would be a strong indication that he's coming back to the NBL, or is that any indication, or not really?
Well, they did that with Jerome when Jerome Randall was out of contract with the 36ers and wasn't coming back to Adelaide when it was clear that he wasn't coming back. They whacked him into that NBL team that Rob Beveridge actually coached, that went to China, and so that people could have another look at him and go, well, yeah, this guy's definitely up to our level. Yep. So I think the league is smart enough to know that Conga should be playing in it, so let's expose him to a few, so clubs can see him again and go, oh, wait a minute, that might be the right guy for us. I mean, we've talked about who should be that new import. And then now that we've got Trimble and Long,
Conga,
they're both locked away. Yeah, you go, would Conga fit there? Mm. Or you go, New Zealand, what direction are they going? Would Conga fit there? Mm. So, you start to ask that question. You go back to Brisbane and say, what if Lamar Patterson doesn't come back? Would Conga fit there? So suddenly you go, actually, there's a number of places. Yeah. There's a number of places where he could be just the right fit. Adelaide wasn't one of them, unfortunately, but I don't think they left with any angst or anything like that. It just wasn't the right place for him.
I think the three imports that I think have the three lowest stocks, like buy low, sell high, I put Conger at the top of the list. He's probably the best. Actually, I'll write him down. Give me 2 seconds. The other one, here we go. Demetrius Conger, Cedric Jackson, and David Ware. I'm kind of going to fly the David Ware flag. I think he had a rather forgettable season last year. I just think he had NBA interest early on. He'd be the one who has got the lowest stock who I'd be like, you know what? As our third import, we're going to give it a try. What do you think? No, you don't think so.
I don't think David Ware is up to holding down an import spot on it. No.
Okay.
I just saw him as a duplicate of Daniel Kickett, except that I do remember games where Kickett kicked it. I also remember games where Kickett couldn't do anything defensively and was a bit embarrassing. But I just remember the Perth game. That's all I remember from
Perth,
the season.
Yeah, that's all I remember. And maybe I'm looking...
That ain't enough.
Maybe I'm seeing too much, yeah. Anyway, we'll keep going on.
Who was your other one, though? After Conga, there was the one in the middle.
Cedric Jackson.
No, I think the game's passed him by. I think it's he's got to go find himself a league in Malta or at a lesser
stock
level.
His stock would be the lowest of the imports last year.
Yes.
From a performance standpoint, from a
I don't see him in our league ever again.
I'd agree with that. Let's go to Melbourne United. They've announced Long finally. Why do you think they took so long to do that?
Because perhaps the whole name Long, they just thought they'd make this as long as possible. We'll just drag this out. We'll go long on this. I really don't know, because maybe when the initial announcement came out, they hadn't crossed the T's and dotted the I's. And sometimes there's still a few little bits and pieces to go when it's like, oh, we've got this guy across the line, and then his agent says, yeah, I love the contract, but do we include a car in that? And then you've got to go back and go, oh, do we have a car in that? Do we allow it? And then, there's those little bits and pieces to sort of still sign off on. And I think somebody may have jumped the gun on that.
Sean Long was the one. If I had to point a finger, I would probably point it at Sean Long for jumping the gun.
Right, because he'd already made up his mind that that's what he was going to do, but it hadn't been signed off by his agent, hadn't been signed off by his by the new club at this stage. So there was like, whoa, everybody backtrack, let's just sort of come off that till we get it done, and then we can make the announcement in our own time, and it took a little long.
Yeah.
That's got to be the last long joke we do, surely.
Right. I think that's fair. What was I going to say? I just also Vince Crivelli's words on the situation. I just felt they created an unnecessary angst. I don't. Maybe if he could take it back, he would reword what he said. But it did really feel like it was different from like, oh yeah, he didn't give the sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, yeah, we're going to sign him. We're just working out the particulars.
Final really details.
He really came out and said like, oh no, we haven't signed him, and you know he's still out there, and we're looking at. It was very. It was almost too cool for school, and I just thought it left a little bit of a sour taste, and I thought maybe that had soured long, but obviously not.
No, well, the interesting thing for me was is that I love Corey Williams as a human being and as an entertainer. I think he's a lot of fun, and I don't mind that he says a lot of crazy stuff that get a reaction, but what I do find is how often he's wrong. I just find that really amusing that he had Sean Long 100% in red playing for the Perth Bandits or the Wildcats, whichever one comes first. Yeah, he was just like, that's a done deal, that's done, that's gone, forget about it. And it's like, well, actually, no. But from that, like he wouldn't have just made that up. He'd have heard that Long wants to stay in the league and come on the mainland. He would have... Somebody must have said Perth to him somewhere along the way. But he did have one thing right, and that was that Long wanted to stay in our league. So, when negotiations started with Melbourne United, Long got a bit excited and got a bit ahead of himself. And, yeah, maybe they didn't handle that terribly well, but it's done and dusted, and the negotiation and everything will be soon forgotten.
They'll be a fun team. I mean, I think Adelaide have gone. Adelaide have bobbed defensively. Melbourne United have weaved offensively. I think they're going to be such a fun team.
Absolutely.
I worry about, can they be an even a middle-of-the-road defensive team? That's where Dean Vickerman... And I think Dean Vickerman's sitting around going, this is exciting. I get a chance to really see if I can mould a team in my defensive image.
Look, everybody says that it's all about defence to win championships. But to be entertaining, what do you want to see? Do you want to see... if I can hold you to 2 points, I've only got to score 4. Or if you get 90, I'll get 100. What's more entertaining to watch? Mm-hmm. And at a time when we are moving in that direction, that NBA direction of it's not just basketball, it's entertainment, then I don't have a problem with the fact that they're an offensive juggernaut. Because a lot of times, teams that are offensive juggernauts, their defensive abilities are underplayed. Mm. And I look back at a couple of 36ers teams there in the late 90s that won championships with Brett Maher and Kevin Brooks and Darnell Mee and Martin Catalini just filling it up. People going, oh, this is just an amazing offensive unit. They played some really decent defense. And they got no credit for that because they were so busy piling on, you know, 120 points that you tend to not notice that they're stopping other teams. And I go back to the 86 Sixers as well, who won by an average of 20-plus points and only dropped 2 games. And they were just, now they were scoring 150, but you didn't see, hang on, they're actually holding the other team to 75. Yeah. We see it with Golden State too. Their defense wasn't too thrilling today, but generally speaking, they've got some very good defensive players that... Iguodala, Clay Thompson, they're guys that can play, but you lose that in the flurry of Steph Curry threes and all that sort of excitement. So when you say that about United, okay, the only guy I can look at United and say he needs to do work on his D is Chris Goulding. We all know that. Yep. But he's such an offensive force that, you know, I think back a long time ago here in South Australia, we had a player called Werner Lind, and everyone said, well, he's just a scorer. Well, isn't that what you need to win a game? Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, well, I held Werner to 30 and I scored 20. Well, Werner's still plus 10. If his defense is not as good as yours, but he still outscored you by 10, then, you know, on that sort of scale. So I don't worry about Goulding because I think he can cover him. Mitch McCarron will play defense. Oh, yeah. So you know, I think they'll be better at that end than you might be giving them credit for.
And I think also a lot of people don't count into defense tempo. If you can dictate tempo, then you're kind of one step ahead of the game. You know, if you're like, we're going to put 100 points on the board, a team like Perth is going to think, if we have to put 100 points on the board, that's a lot for a team like Perth to do in their current construction or even their construction last season. I think the one thing I not so much worry about, but the thing they've got to get is rebounding. You don't want to be a team that plays bad defense and gives up a lot of second chance shots. But they've got Long, who's a good rebounder. So it'd be interesting to see what they do with their third import and any other spots they've got left. But
We discussed the power forward spot, didn't we? The fact that Barlow's really is our only option at this particular point.
He seems to be that going into next season as well.
Yeah, so I reckon that's where they might need to shore up a little bit.
Well, the thing is, I mean, Venky Joyce, when we talk about, he's sort of, I have a feeling he's going to perhaps not return to the NBL. I don't know where I heard that, but no, I think he enjoys the lifestyle of basketball elsewhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the fact that he hasn't already been snapped up suggests there's some doubt in the minds of coaches that should be looking at him. And if that's the case, well, hey, head on to Europe. Mm. What the hell, you know? Make your name there and become more of a target later.
Yeah, and a good lifestyle, I'm sure, depending on where you go.
Yeah. Yep.
Let's go on to... Is there going to be another next star? Have you heard anything, or would you like to see one?
Oh, look, I think the more you can get in, the better, really. I think it'd be lovely if every club had one, but I mean, I'm sure the Players Association would scream about the fact that there's three imports and now a next star as well, you know. Mm-hmm. But you've got to understand that our league is not what it used to be in terms of, it's not there to develop boomers. You know, when the National League started in the 79, it was essentially to give our best players in each state the opportunity to play against each other more consistently instead of just against their intrastate rivalries. And so, you know, your Larry Sengstocks and Phil Smythes and people like that came into Australian teams, they were really helped by the National League. But now we have players in the NBA. So the National Basketball League's priority is not to produce boomers, even though we have, and we continue to, but that's not his priority. His priority is to be sustainable and entertaining. And so if that's the case, and that means that there's going to be three imports and a fourth next star guy, well, so be it. Fight your way into that team and as an Australian and push him out.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, LaMelo Ball's been the name floated around. That on two things. One, is it likely feasible and an actuality, or two, would it be a good idea with them here, or would it seem hammy or tacky?
Well, I don't know. Is Dad coming?
Probably.
Because if Dad's coming, then revert to what you just said, tacky in a little bit. It's just going to be a bit of a circus then. But if it's like, well, he's going to go to play in the NBL, LaMelo's going to go and play in the NBL to become a better player so that we can have a look at him as an NBA prospect down the track, and then we're taking this seriously, then I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But if it's just going to be Dad comes down and talks to the media and shoots his mouth off and acts the fool, then what's the point?
Yeah. Now, the question is, can the kid play? And I mean, he's drafted prospect, he's sort of top 15, which would suggest yes. So if he wants to play, I think go for it. And I think the father's actually been really well behaved. And this is a point I made a little while ago where I said, you know, LaVar Ball is eccentric and odd and a little bit of a muckraker and rebel and rogue, but he's infinitely better behaved than someone like Mike Muscala's father, who came out and said the racist things on Twitter. So it's sort of like regain a little bit of perspective on things. So if the kid can play and wants to develop, that then yes. But if not,
don't you think though that LaVar Ball went quiet?
Yep.
At the same time as LeBron James arrived with the Lakers,
yeah, and no coincidence. Could you,
yes, I don't think there's any. I think there might have been a listen. We want you to keep your mouth shut, and here's a lazy couple of million.
Yep.
So just shut up.
I totally agree because
he was just ridiculous there at one stage. It was like every second day someone was trying to interview him because you know in the media you know when you've got a live one that's going to say something crazy that's going to get you on the front of the news. Mm. You're not going to have to wait till the sports section, but you're going to be on the front of the news bulletin. You're going to be all over the sporting bulletin. So as a media person, you're drawn to that guy, and then suddenly nothing.
Yeah,
all quiet.
Yeah, too convenient for me. Chima Maneki, are you sort of sad about that? I mean, I haven't looked into the particulars of why he was sort of all of a sudden taken off. It seems possible.
I think he was in it was his eligibility
was,
which was in question. Yeah, it's just the way it is. You know, like I am curious at this particular point if Majok Deng, who formerly of the 36ers, currently of Forestville Eagles, and on his way to Cairns Taipans, is he oh, does he have an Australian passport? Because 2 years ago, when the 36ers went to Singapore to play in the tournament, pre-season tournament there, the Merlion Cup, he was detained at the airport because he was travelling on a Sudanese UN, asylum seeker or some sort of passport that wasn't an Australian passport. So at that point in time, he was basically had the flight, got held up in the airport, didn't have the right sort of passport, they flew him back. And wow. I'm not sure that anything subsequently ever happened. So he, again, if you'd really checked his eligibility, not that I want to start anything, but I'm just saying, there's a few players playing in the league where I think there's just a presumption that, oh, this guy's okay. You know, but if you check, you may find some anomalies around the place.
I think South East Melbourne, they tread a fine line. They were very crafty. They had Chuma Maneki for a while and sort of looked like they were going to get through with that one, and it didn't happen. But then the one that they got sort of a little bit sketchy was, Kendall Stevens.
Yeah.
He's got, the rules are straight, born in Australia but not a citizen, but here and that, it's odd.
Yeah, that one to me strikes me that, all right, we're going to have to play Ty Wesley, who's been playing in our league as a local. We're going to have to play him as an import. So we're going to bring in an import, and we're going to find some trickery pokery and play him as a local. And so they've done the big switcheroo. You know, I think that was some clever, fancy footwork. Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly, if they're alive, would have been pretty impressed with that stuff. Because, I think they've gotten away with something there.
Yeah, I'm not going to look too deeply because I think the more the merrier.
I'm the same too. I haven't written anything about it because there's some things that don't fuss me. That's okay. Mm-hmm. That's fine. You know, when they open the doors to all the players in the Pacific region, or they're opening the doors to players from Asia, that's okay by me. You know, like it's like the NBA. Yeah. The NBA doesn't have any import restrictions or foreign player restrictions, mm-hmm. and as I say, now that our NBL does not have a priority to produce boomers, then its priority is to be an entertaining league.
That is an interesting point. I mean, you put it right, where the NBL is not sort of a barn league anymore or an incubator. It is a pure standalone talent. Would you open the doors to just build your teams, good day and good luck?
Yep. Look, I'm sorry, but I would. And people say, oh, you're a traditionalist, you want this, you want that. And that's not traditional. I go in that direction saying, if we want our league, like we like to sort of hint at our league is coming up in the world rankings and, you know, there's the NBA, there's EuroLeague, and, oh, are we next? Well, if we want to legitimately be next or be considered in that sort of conversation, then you've got to say it's not the ANBL, the way that New Zealand referred to it as the Australian NBL, it isn't. It just has to be the NBL, and you go, okay, doors are open. Yeah. And now, because it's based in Australia, you'd be a fool to fill your team with foreign players. You'd be a fool to do that because you wouldn't get your local support because people want to see, like here in Adelaide, a Brett Maher come through a Sturt Junior program and then make it to the 36ers and then make it to the top of the 36ers and top of the league. Mm. People want to have that guy as the role model. But, you know, I can see that there's a place for lots of other players. If we had a Pau Gasol decides he wants to retire now from the NBA and he still figures he's got 1 or 2 years left, doesn't want to play in Europe, well, yeah. Have him come here. Have him come here. Open the doors.
Yeah, I can see it either way. Let's go on to the Boomers. And the question I have for you on that one is, Thon McCurr not being named in the squad or not putting his name up to be named in the squad. Are we certain?
Sorry, who did you say? You just dropped out for a second.
Oh, sorry. Thon McCurr?
All right, yeah. Yep.
I think McCurr is the pronunciation.
Okay. No, that's fine.
He hasn't been named in the squad of 18. There's been rumours that he sort of said, no, I'm not going. Is it sort of that? My question is, why isn't he in the squad?
I'm sure he would be if he wanted to be and if they wanted him really. But he's in that point of his NBA career where he's a little bit in no man's land. Like he was coming along okay at Milwaukee, and then, you know, there's a few changes, coaching changes, and, you know, it's that Kyle Adnam, Peter Hooley situation that occurred at United. You know, one coach loves him, that coach goes, the next coach comes in and loves the next guy. So then he wants to be out. He's traded to Detroit. He's trying to make his way in that world. Now, at this particular time, it might be better for him. I don't know what advice he's had, but it might be better for him to stay there, to be working out, to be in front of the coaches, to be developing his game. And is there a guarantee that he's going to make the final 12? No. So, you know, I'm sure he's had a conversation with Andre Lemanis, and they've sat down and they've gone through what the best options are. And if the best option is that he's over there and not part of the squad, then it makes perfect sense. People do want to read more into some things than are necessarily there. He's got a multi-million dollar career to think about, and he's not established. Let's not kid ourselves and say, oh, he's a really established NBA player. He could be out of the league tomorrow. He could be, you know,
3-year deal.
Yeah, but 3-year deals, yeah. I've seen a lot of those over my time, Joseph.
2.1 to be precise. Yeah,
all I'm saying is he has got to lock away the fact that he is an NBA player. In the same way that Mitch Creek now is over there with the Minnesota Timberwolves and working out with them now, because Mitch is still, wearing the green and gold is huge for Mitch.
Yeah.
And if he can make that team, he definitely wants to be in it. But right now, that's where he is. He's over there working out.
I just think I agree with all that for sure. I mean, money, security, not even money, that sounds a greedy thing, but just an NBA career is incredibly rewarding as well. But I do think that, I think what Alex Loughton said in an interview where he was like, you know, the green and gold, you think there's going to be more opportunities and then they don't so much come up. You know, something happens. Maybe you're injured and you've lost 4 years if you won Olympics. You know, and obviously there's going to be a big stock put into who performs in this World Cup to who then goes to the Olympics in Japan. So at the same time, you've got to find that balance between NBA success, but also the green and gold would be, you know, it'd be awfully exciting and really memorable.
I think the biggest, for me, the biggest absentee from this particular squad, and I completely understand why he's not there, is Ryan Brokoff. I love him. I think he's one of my favourite players. I loved him when he was playing in Europe. I loved him when he debuted at the World Cup, at the previous World Cup. I loved him at the Olympics. I loved him playing for Dallas Mavericks. Yeah. And you know, his wife is pregnant, and it's going to be a difficult pregnancy, and he wants to stay with that. That's 100% behind him. But I think his absence does hurt because he's 6'7", and he can make a shot. And, yeah, I think that's the one that, you know, Thon not being there, okay, just someone else will step up. You know, you could throw in, where's Isaac Humphries? Where's this guy? Where's that guy? There's a few names, but who they'll actually miss, that's Brokoff.
I agree, and I think what'll be interesting to see is if sort of he has the Olympics or something, and what would he miss a tournament like this for his second child? You know what I mean? Like the first child is awfully exciting. The second is like, well, you know, I've kind of done this. I think I'd prefer to play in the green and gold, but that's
perhaps he and his wife might work out their timing a little better.
I think that is very smart. what else did I have on here? Okay, here's a question for you, bud. Is Boddy hungry? You've had a lot of sort of sources, references in your work. What's going on?
Look, all right. I'll tell you straight up. I think the journalism industry is going downwards. Yeah, it's going down the gurgler, and I think there's only a handful of journalists that I trust generally across the board, and then there's a very minute number that I trust that are writing about basketball these days. There's no one of that nature in Adelaide. I love the work that Matt Logue does with the Daily Telegraph in Sydney. I think he's old school, and I'm old school, so I've got a lot of respect for that. Roy Ward at The Age.
Yep. Santa?
Greg up in Courier Mail. Greg Davis, I should say. There's just a few, and then these are people who will actually go to both sides of a story, okay, and will use quotes from human beings, all right, from real people. Now, when I was coming up as a journalist, I was told, source what you've got to say. So you actually had to get the source to go on the record. The amount of stories I did in just over four decades of writing basketball where I just quoted an unnamed source, you can count them on one hand, Joseph. That's over a 45-year span. Now, it's all sources, 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 which means you don't have to justify what you're saying.
Right.
You know, you just put it down to, oh, you know, a source close to, and it takes me back to women's magazines where they have these ridiculous pictures of couples and they say, you know, a source close to the family, a family friend, a girlfriend of the celebrity, and you know it's BS. You know it's BS. You know someone's just sitting there making that stuff up. And so when you start to use sources instead of actually naming human beings that are going on the record with their quote, but you're just saying the sources have informed you, well, you could have got that from anybody. Your mate could have rung up and said, hey, have you heard that Andrew Bogut's going to go to the Brisbane Bulls? Oh, yeah, a source says Bogut is unhappy at Sydney. Mm. Like, you don't have to justify squat. And that's the realm of the blogger. Bloggers can do that kind of rubbish because we can, because we don't have to justify anything, you know. I mean, I try not to do that. I try to be a journalist even as a blogger. But when I see journalists use sources constantly, yeah. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is a nonsense. And so because I see it as a nonsense, I change it to sources as in S-A-U-C-E-S, and I, Mr. Hollandaise and Mr. Soy and Mr. Tomato and Mr. Barbecue, yep. Because it, to me, it's a nonsense, Joseph. It's, if you can't name who it is, then don't write the story or do a bit more digging. Do a bit more digging till you can put the story in somebody's mouth so that the public knows that it's true. And that's how you build your credibility, and that's how you build your trust. Not by sources this, sources that. That's a load of BS to me. Always has been.
What about, here's a question for anyone who's a journalism student, and myself. When you're, like, talking to someone, and they give you something that's pretty spicy, do you, when you say, can I quote you in that, or can I use you as a source, or may I name you, is that just how you just ask it straight out like that, or is there a certain process to sort of...
It depends on what's going on. Like if I'm working, I'm a working journalist, I ring you up, I identify myself as a working journalist, I want to talk to you on the record about something that, you know, about your podcast, we're on the record, and you say, yes, happy to do that, then anything you say to me, I can use.
Okay.
All right? Unless you specifically in that conversation say, can we go off the record for a moment, and I agree, and you then tell me something that's important for background so that I've got context, and then we go back on the record. I can't use what you then told me, but I can influence the way I write it because I know something now that I didn't know before. But so that's how you do it. It's not difficult. It really isn't. You know, and once you've identified yourself as a working journalist and you're writing a story, then that person you're talking to has to know that what they say is quotable.
Yeah.
Unless they make that specific, you know, if I'm interviewing you and then I say halfway through the interview, can I quote you? The person's going to go, well, what have we been talking about for the last 10 minutes? What's that worth? None of that was worth anything. Am I that boring? Do you just want to quote me now?
Would you have any secrets to? Because I've reached out to people all the time to come on here. Do you have a particular recipe or avenue that you liked or would recommend?
No, because look, there's some people that you interview that are so good that even as you're interviewing them, you know, oh, there's my lead to that story, or oh, that's brilliant. Well, you know, as they're talking to you, and then there's others. James Ennis is a great example. You remember James Ennis, the importer for Perth, who rightly threw his All-Star 5 trophy in the drink, right? When I interviewed him, Perth was coming to Adelaide, and I interviewed him, and it was like pulling teeth. Whether he didn't know who I was, didn't trust who I was, didn't care to do the interview, what the hell, and I just could not, you know, I've got 10 minutes, and I'm getting one-word answers, I'm going nowhere, and I'm thinking, I'm just at that point where I'm thinking, oh, bugger it, you know, I'll just write this one off. And then I just happened to say, have you tried Vegemite?
Okay.
And the second I said that interview did a 180. He's going, oh, man, Vegemite, that's like eating tar, man. You know, that's like eating Asheville. What the hell? How do you guys eat that? And off he went. And I said, how did you get exposed to it? And he told me the whole story about how they lathered it onto a piece of bread for him, and he bit in. And suddenly, so the only thing I would say is you don't know when you're interviewing someone whether they're going to be good or bad, so persist and see if you can find a way. Because even a bad interview, if you persist and listen to what they're saying and try and find where could I go with this, how could I maybe draw this person out, and then you might find if you just happen to hit the right numbers, boom, yeah, the door opens and bang, away they go, and you go, oh, thank God, I've saved this, because yeah, Ennis is one of my primary examples, because that's relatively recent in terms of my history.
What about like securing an interview in the first place? Like obviously, you're from a paper that has a clout, but also just approach people. Is there a certain way?
Well, it's changed, you see, because now clubs have their own websites. All sporting clubs do. Any sporting club worth its salt has its own website, and so it has its own people churning their stuff out. So now it's a lot harder in today's world, like than it was when I started. Like say 79 when the league started, mm-hmm. We had West Adelaide Bearcats and Glenelg.
What is a Bearcat? Bonnie, sorry to interrupt. What?
It's when a grizzly bear and a mountain lion get really, really drunk.
Yeah, gotcha.
Somewhere in Cincinnati this happened.
Okay.
And, yeah, I don't know how the hell they consummated it, but there you go.
Because, I mean, koala is sort of a bear meets a cat. It's got claws. So does a bear. I don't know. No, I'm lost.
But, all right, so we got the West Adelaide Bearcats and Glenelg Tigers. Mm-hmm. I had the work and home number, because in those days we didn't have mobiles, but I had the work and home numbers of every player and every coach. So if Rick Hodges played a great game on the road in Melbourne and he came home, I could ring him up Sunday. I'd just ring him up when he got home, said, Rick, are you free to talk? Are you stuffed from the Tribune? And he'd be like, no, let's talk. And I could interview him and basketball people at that time were really happy to be able to do an interview and promote their sport, right? So, you know, when I was doing football for a while, because there was a period where I was a multi-sports writer, not just basketball, I was doing football, soccer, athletics, and I found, my God, the people that were really easy to interview were basketball people, athletics people, and soccer people, and the reason was they weren't getting publicity, so they were happy to promote the game. I went out to do football players, and they were dicks.
Yeah.
They were like, you know, oh, got to do this. You know, they were so much harder to do because they weren't interested. They were already getting it. Yeah. And so I went through a golden period, and it went to that point where when people had mobiles, I just basically had everybody's mobile. Now, I didn't abuse that. I didn't go ringing people up at, you know, 7 in the morning or 10 at night. I would ring or I would send a text saying, hey, I'd like to do an interview on the fact that your mother's here or whatever it was. And then I'd get a response, and away we go. Nowadays, because everyone has their own website, clubs are more protective of what goes out. They want to know what goes out. So now you've got to go through a club PR person or the club's media person, and then they'll want to know why you want to do the interview. And it's so much harder. I don't envy today's journalists.
I think, what was I about to say? It's difficult. And what's also strange as well is that the NBL has never really had a huge... Like, it hasn't had an Israel fallout. It hasn't had, the NRL problems or whatever. It's actually a really well-maintained league that, you know, its players, for the most part, have behaved incredibly well. And secondly, it has a really close connection with its women's equivalent, the WNBL. I mean, what actually aggravates me is WAFL came out and it's this big splash, this big thing. And I'm like, the WNBL has been, you know, on parity with the NBL for a long, long while, and they've been a good sort of solid product together, and yet it just didn't click. And I think that's because you just for a bunch of reasons. But the reason you said before is that they don't quite get out there as much as they probably could or should.
Yeah, when the AFLW started 3 years ago, I was a little bit pissy, I must confess, at the amount of immediate publicity they were getting.
Okay.
You know, and in many instances, there was a number of people that had failed in other sports or were ordinary in other sports and that had gone there, and now they were football superstars. And really, in that first year of the AFLW, I thought there were a lot of girls and women running around trying to play football, and there was one footballer, and that was Erin Phillips. And she stood out because she was a footballer, whereas there were all these other people who were just trying to play football. Now, that amazingly has changed in two more years. I went to the grand final here between the Crows and Carlton, and everybody on that field knew how to play football. They were footballers now. So the progress they've made in a short space of time is wonderful. But initially, I kind of resented the fact that they were just immediately handed all this football publicity, because football just generates its own publicity so much. But A little ways into that, I thought, no, you know what? This is good for all women's sport. The fact that they've got such a high profile is good for women's sport generally. Mm. Because now, when the Lightning issue came up in Adelaide, where there were financial problems with the club, it wasn't like, oh, it's just women's sport, you know, brush it off. It was like, wait a minute, you know, we've just had the Crows play in front of, you know, 47,000 people or whatever it was. We've got to worry about this. And people came out of the woodwork to help the Lightning. And so I think there is a positive spin-off effect. But, getting back to a point we discussed way before, having $13,000 now as your minimum salary for, you know, a squad of, say, 12, 14 people, that's putting a hell of a strain on a lot of clubs. That will put a hell of a strain on them. And you know, they'll have to work even so much harder just to break even.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Because I don't know. I think the NBL actually has to do a better job of realigning themselves with the WNBL really, really strongly. But that's another issue for another day. Going back to journalism, just the state of question asking. What do you think of the state of question asking in let's say NBL sports journalism? And then just, is there any like books or things in particular when you think about, well, where do you learn how to be a good interviewer that you would spring to? Or?
Well, this is going to sound incredibly arrogant, and I'm sorry that it does, but I used to feel when I went into a press conference, I would listen to the first couple of questions and I'd think, I'm not asking a question here. I'm not going to ask any questions because, you know, I'm not going to give these guys their story. Because the questions they're asking are so bad that if I ask a leading question such as, okay, at the 7-minute mark of the last quarter when so-and-so got an unsportsmanlike foul, did that's when the game changed, and then the coach responds to that, and then everybody's making notes, and I'm thinking, oh, Jesus, I just gave away, you know, a valuable piece of information that I need to keep for myself. So my MO was to grab the coach on their way in or on their way out and get my quotes. And so, because everything I wanted to know was game related and game specific. Like my note taking was very meticulous so that I knew what was happening.
That was my next question. When you're watching a game and you know you're going to cover it, are you taking notes? Are you statistically?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. In what way do you take notes?
First of all, I rule a line down the middle of the pad, and on the left is the team that I'm writing about, so it'd be the 36ers or the Lightning or whatever, and on the right is their opponent. And so I'll put first quarter and 9:50 DJ layup 2-0.
Oh, no and then way.
On, on one side,
the running.
I'll do the running, because what tends to happen is if you don't do that, you will remember at the end of the game that there was that period where Casper Ware hit three threes in a row. That was was that in the first quarter or was that in the second quarter?
Okay, yeah.
And because I've written it down, I just got a glance at the second quarter. That was at that point. I've got the time. And so then I can say this team went scoreless for 6 minutes and 45 seconds because I've got it there on my pad. Now, that's all I'm doing. I'm adding spectacular block, huge dunk, bad foul, unsportsmanlike, but I'm not doing the full stats. I'm not doing
steal, assist.
No. It's just all the points are there and key moments in the game. And then I worked with one of those four color biros so that I would make stars and things that I need
Did
to go. That's something I've got to mention. red, actually, because that was all, that always jumped out. So I'd do the first quarter blue, second quarter black, third quarter blue, fourth quarter black. So I could, again, that would immediately differentiate as I'm flicking. No. Green would be unsportsmanlike fouls and that kind of stuff.
Okay. Green, I feel very bad. Whenever I look at a four-colour pen in the bin, I always open it up and unscrew it, and I always see that the red is, you know, quarter full. The blue is totally gone. The black is long gone. And then the green is, there's plenty of green in the tube, and it always makes me feel a little sad for green. So that's why it's my favourite colour.
I feel your pain. But, you know, there are times when it's just not powerful enough. Yeah. It just doesn't convey the message.
It depends upon what colour your paper is. Anyway, there's a whole book on that. So that's your processing game. Okay, because I think John Casey would seem to have a very similar method, and because I've seen his notes on Twitter, he takes photographs, and his are incredibly extensive, and I can only assume in the same way as yours.
Yeah, well, which means that, you know, and I'm not a hoarder, but I do hang on to some things, and I've got some notepads that go back to the Sydney Olympics, so I can pull out the game between Australia and China at the Sydney, and Canada at the Sydney Olympics, the first game which Australia lost when Steve Nash tore him a new one, and I can actually sort of, I can just give you the whole game back as it happened, and I like being able to do that, because then when someone says something that I know is wrong, I can actually go back and check.
Well, it seems as though you've rubbed off on Lennon Cooper in that way, who I spoke to, by the way. Thank you for that. That was great.
No worries.
Loved it. And he says he's basically that way, but with video content. He'll catalogue everything on DVD, and he has an extensive library. Every game will be... It won't be as sort of, you know, first quarter, five-minute mark, but it will say something like, big game, Willie Farley, 30 points, da-da-da, you know, a little list of three to five most important visual cues for him. So it seems to be the way to go.
Yeah, and so that's how I do it, and that's why when post game I'd go into a press conference, I would know what I felt were the key turning points in the game, and then someone else is firing in a few questions, and I'm thinking these questions aren't really indicating these people understood, or this particular group of journalists. I don't want to tarnish everybody with. I mean, like Matt McQuaid from Sydney, or Roy, who I've mentioned, or Matt Logue, or Greg Davis. These sorts of guys, they know what they're doing. But there's a lot of people that, as basketball has become a little more popular, they've been assigned the sport, and they don't really know what to ask, and they're listening for what else is being said. So I didn't want to help facilitate that. I'm a bit protective of my own work, and so I didn't want to be giving people clues. So I tend to ask sweet bugger all in a press conference, and then people would wonder, where do you get those quotes from?
Well, that's interesting, because obviously the big wave of journalism, I think, now starts and ends with the likes of Bill Simmons, who takes no notes during a game. And he's on record saying that a lot, and is not fond of the press conference at all. What do you think about him and his style, and the way journalism's changed with him, seemingly?
I like Bill's work, and I like the fact that he's such a Boston Celtics fan that it's just sad, you know. But I like the fact that it's sad. You know, it's really amusing, and I totally agree that post-game press conferences a lot of the time are a total waste of time. To me, I hated them, and when I was working, the reality was that my deadlines were so tight to the end of the game that I would run to catch Joey before he went into the press conference, grab a couple of quotes from him. Wow. If there was someone else I needed, I'd grab and I'd race back to my desk, and I wouldn't even worry about the press conference because, and again, I don't mean to sound arrogant, but I know what I've seen. I've watched four quarters. I know what I saw. I can write. I can tell you what happened. You know, I don't need to now go in and have the coach tell me that. Yeah, well, you know, Jacob Wiley scoring 40 was pretty important in our win. Yeah. I kind of already know that. You know what I mean? So I don't. I think a lot of what is said in press conferences are a total waste of time.
For writers, I think the reason why it's there is for the vision.
Avenue. Absolutely. Whereas if you want to get some really good quotes from your coach or your captain, give it 24 hours. Now give it 24 hours when they've had a chance to settle down, and now they're actually going to give you something. So what would happen is Sixers would play on a Saturday night. I would write a game review for the Sunday Mail. A paper, and then on Sunday afternoon, I would catch up with the coach. We would have a prearranged time when I'd ring him, and it was like fantastic. He would say, I would get stuff then that you could never get in a press conference, yeah. You know, because they're either irate with the officiating or just basically very happy they got away with a win they shouldn't have got away with or whatever, you know. But 24 hours later, you're finding out that so-and-so was injured and had to carry this through. You know, they're telling you stuff now that makes Monday's story, which is a day removed from your game review and is more about what actually happened and what we can see looking forward. I found that far better. But now in this day and age, you don't get to do that because now the clubs are controlling information and, you know, you haven't got the coach's number necessarily or you can't contact a player. I mean, I've still got them all, which is great because it means they trust me and they've given it to me. Mm. But I think most journalists now, or especially those that are just assigned basketball, don't really know what's going on and are forced. They take the press release.
Yeah.
Just rewrite the press release.
I can certainly say from an outside looking in, I mean, I contact people. I mainly try and contact people who write about the game because I find, first of all, it's very difficult to secure players, and whether rightfully or wrongfully so, that's just the way it is. So I don't endeavour too much on that. So I try and get people who write because, one, they're good at talking. It's what they do. And, two, they're more than willing to do it for the most time. So they're the ones that I think give the better perspective information, but you know, you're right when you say that players are incredibly difficult to get a hold of. And because the people I spoke to, like I got in touch with Phil Smyth, and he gave me his money. You know, he's quite willing and
old school. We've got nothing to hide.
Yeah.
Don't have to hide behind some club, you know, juggernaut that decides, oh no, we shouldn't allow access to our coach, we shouldn't allow access to that player who missed the free throws. Maybe that player wants to talk about missing those free throws and how it's affected him. You know, maybe we can get a really good story out of that, a positive story out of that. But got to protect everybody.
Here's my question. Do you think the players are relieved, thinking, oh, thank God we don't have to do media anymore? Or a part of them kind of like, well, I'd actually kind of like to say something. What do you think? Would it swing both ways, but if you had to sort of...
Yeah. I don't know because I don't know the correct answer to that. I don't know if there is a correct answer to that, Joseph, because a guy like Daniel Johnson, who I like quite a lot as a human being, is quite a reticent speaker.
Very quiet.
So he would probably be happy that nobody's bothering him,
yeah.
You know. And then there are guys like...
Not contactable.
Right. Whereas a guy like Mitch, I can ring him up now and I'll be able to do 25, 30 minutes with him straight up because he's happy to talk. He wants to talk. So, and he's happy to bring you into the picture and give you an angle that no one else has. Like when he was in town, he did a bunch of interviews, television, radio, newspaper, me and a couple of other bloggers and things. And if you looked at them, like Liam, the one he did with Liam Santa Maria, they're all completely different. They're all completely different. He's so media savvy. He knew what to give which person, you know, and so that it would still be fresh. So you wouldn't go, oh, I'm not reading another bloody Mitch Creek story. I've read that already three times, because you haven't. The three stories you've read, you've read the first one, then you read the second one is different, you know, and it's more information about something that you liked in the first story, then the third one. So it's a difficult question to answer whether players are relieved or not, because again, Adam Gibson was a piece of cake. Jason Kadee. There's a bunch of guys that you could talk to at any time, and they would always give you something wonderful. And then there's Nathan Sobey, who's, again, someone that doesn't really want to talk to you. I mean, he will, but he doesn't really want to. So I don't know the answer to that one.
That's okay. I think we'll end it there.
Okay, and that's the end of the episode. Thanks very much, everyone. Don't forget to like and subscribe for more episodes every Tuesday. Also follow me on Twitter if you want to be a part of that, at NBL Pocket Pod, P-O-D, not podcast, that was unfortunately taken. Also follow Botty at BottyNaj.com, BottyNaj.com, and also BottyNaj on Twitter, same handle. Thanks very much, and see you next week.